Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it's always very wonderful to be able to be with you, to bring you information for motivation, inspiration, and definitely for liberation. Before we begin tonight's program, as usual, we always give thanks and praises to our Creator, and we are certainly very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. And tonight's program, of course, will exemplify that as usual, and we thank all of you for taking the time to tune in to join us. Tonight, we're going to talk about several topics, including, of course, part two of what we started last week in talking about some of the stuff that's going on in our communities. You know, we are dealing with what some may call treason, what some may call sellouts, what some may call just straight-up Negro stuff. Well, we call it that and then some, and the reality is we're calling it just the way it is. Stay tuned, because we're going to bring you some more powerful dialogue tonight. We're going to talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal, the upcoming celebration of life. We're going to also talk to a sister who recently, 19 years of old, was beaten by cops in California. We're going to talk with her tonight, Sister Nubia Bowe. And joining us again is going to be Brother Mike Gray, as we had last week, and also Chima Fred Hampton, Jr., and all that more. So, y'all hang in there right there. We're going to be right back, and we're going to kick the show off for tonight in the way that we usually do, with power for prosperity, and at some point, peace. We'll be right back.
Background other than Marvin Gaye. And isn't it interesting that this is what was being said, 30 years ago or so? Wow. Doesn't seem like much has changed, has it? Well, obviously not. But certainly we know that we've got to now bring about some additional change. And with that, we are certainly gearing up to do that. Tonight we're going to talk about how to deal with traitors and saboteurs and destructive kinds of people in our community. We're going to talk about that, and we're going to talk more about Marissa Alexander, needless to say. We want to give you some updates on that. And we are going to talk, as indicated earlier, we're going to talk about police and governmental terrorism. In addition to that, we're going to give you a report on gentrification, and particularly as we move forward in putting this summit together for next year that we're looking at, that we're calling, rather, the Black Anti-Gentrification Summit. That's going to be happening next year, and we're in the process of putting that together now. As a matter of fact, this coming Saturday, you will be able to hear, participate in a forum that's going to take place for the Mumia Abu-Jamal Celebration of Life. And that's going to happen, of course, here in Philadelphia next Saturday. There's something going on April 25th as well. I'm going to give you more information about that, too. But on Saturday, getting back to the gentrification forum, that's going to really focus on what's going on nationwide, all over the country. And so, unfortunately, there are many communities throughout the U.S. who our people have already experienced being displaced. And so what we're going to do, of course, is begin to not only focus on how that happened, but focus on why, because it's much deeper than what many of us realize. And, of course, it's connected to not only the dismantlement of so-called education. It's also what we are now seeing, a very intricate plan that also connects, again, in the dismantlement of so-called education, the from school to prison pipeline is wide open, along with a bunch of other things that we're finding. So it's not coincidental that the rise now in what we know as police and governmental terrorism, well, if you begin to look at some of the areas that we're seeing this gentrification stuff, we're seeing a larger influx of police, and we're also getting more reports of the various types of atrocities that go with that. So we're putting some of these dots together. Now, since we just heard something from Marvin Gaye, which focused on things that was going on 30 years ago, and again, when we talk about gentrification, we also heard in what Marvin Gaye was talking about is taxes rising. Well, that too is a part of this gentrification thing, because those who are familiar with it know that for the most part the taxes increase, property taxes and other taxes, and this is what helps to move people out. Well, what we also find, again, as we talk about Mumia Abu-Jamal, again, connecting those here who are, I mean, readily available, readily heard, when it came to addressing some of these issues, and we still do have people, but do you notice that we have less black folks in the so-called mainstream media that do that, okay, in comparison? But, you know, again, it's some things we need to observe. The other thing we want to pay close attention to is the so-called politicians and how, once again, how many of the black elected officials speak out against reparations, or not against, but for reparations, rather? I meant to speak out against police and governmental terrorism. How many of them, and why? I mean, in comparison to just a few years ago. Well, here's a perfect example of a black elected official and what we need to look for today, okay?
On the move. Assalamu alaikum. Free Mumia now. Brothers and sisters, comrades, it's certainly my pleasure to be here. One of your state representatives from the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. I am ashamed to be a state representative of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania with a jump like Governor Riz at the helm. I'm ashamed. But I wanted to come here today to let you know that some of us are not afraid, that even though we may be elected, we'll say what's on our minds. But we must understand that we are freedom fighters first, and that all the other things come next. That I'm a black man first, and then a state representative. I don't confuse the two. And I think it's time for us to wake up and realize and understand that you got a lot of us that are willing to go to battle because of freedom. Ain't going to never be free unless we take it. There's too many of us sitting around thinking that it's going to come to us on some damn silver platter. Wake up, you fool, and understand this man has no respect for you. None. none whatsoever. And they will continue to do whatever they do to move you only because they feel that you don't have no heart. Well, let me just say this to y'all. I want to send a message to the FOP. I want to make it loud and clear so there won't be any mistake about what's being said today. And I'm saying it as a black man in the city of Philadelphia and not as the state representative. I ain't scared the hell of y'all. And I'm not going to let you intimidate our people either. That's over. So when you come home with some sweat about you going to boycott every event that we have and you want to stop the people from coming to contribute their money, get the hell out of our way because we ain't going nowhere. The time has come for everybody to wake up and realize that this ain't no joke. We're not going to let you take Mumia's life. And we want to send a message to America that the death penalty has got to end. We're going to wipe it out the same way they did in South Africa. But they did it by power of the people. When Nelson Mandela stepped out of the jail and threw his hands up in the air, he was a strong brother. After 27 years being in jail, it didn't cripple his spirit. And I want to let all of you know that come from all across this country, you got some brothers and sisters in Philadelphia that are willing to rumble no matter what and ain't afraid of the Philadelphia police, the national police, the FOP, and all the rest of them that come together with it. Because we know in Philadelphia that there have been some strong brothers and sisters in the Philadelphia police department who are African-American, who have stood up and have said that they, in fact, are against the death penalty, and in fact, want a new trial for Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. Not only did it come from the National Association of Black Police Officers, but it also came from the Philadelphia Garden City League. And I want to put that on the record here today. In my conclusion, I just want to say, and I know the time has been rough today, but a lot of y'all need to know what this looks like for many of us here in the city of Philadelphia. Governor Reed is getting a message again. Not only did those 115,000 calls go up, that's an underestimated of the number that has been calling, as an underestimated number of those who signed petitions, as an underestimated number of those who come in and out of the city of Philadelphia from all across this country to give the kind of solidarity that's needed in order to make sure we free Mumia Abdul-Jabbar tomorrow. We're not going to take this lying down. And I know that Mumia in his heart knows that we're all with him. So brothers and sisters, we're here as freedom fighters, and black liberation strugglers who understand the importance of who and what we are, and we ain't gonna let no titles get in the way. Free Mumia! Free Mumia! Free Mumia! Free Mumia! No justice! No justice! Assalamu alaikum!
And that was State Representative David P. Richardson. That was also his last public speech. It is unfortunate that our brother made transition just a few days after that that speech that you heard. This week coming for the celebration of Mumia Abdul-Jabbar, the 60th year celebration, which also kicks off now a period where the struggle for his freedom is now being heightened to a whole other level. We know that we have to bring him home now. We've known this for a while, but now we've upped the ante, and we're going to get ready to see some very key things that is going to be introduced into that movement. We're going to talk more about that a little later on, but I want to share that with you, meaning the speech that David P. Richardson gave in August, I believe, of 1995. And it's just so interesting that today, again, how many of our politicians do you hear today, would you hear today that would say something like that? Well, we all know it's certainly not very many. But at any rate, David P. Richardson's Earth Day will also be observed for this coming week when it's time to celebrate the life and the legacy and the work of Mumia Abdul-Jabbar. His Earth Day is April the 23rd, I believe it is. So what we're going to do tonight, we're going to take our brief history moment. And before we get ready to go to our live line and talk to our brother Big Mike, we're going to hear from our sister Coker, who is going to give us our three moment for tonight. If you've been tuning in for the past few weeks, our sister Coker has been bringing us information on some of our people. And before we bring Sister Coker in, we just want to remind you once again that this coming week, April the 25th and 26th, by the way, we are going to celebrate the life of Mumia Abu-Jamal. And remember, we are celebrating his life because if some people had it their way, he would not be alive. So for him to still be living now off of death row, that's somewhat of a miracle, some say. But nevertheless, we know we've got to do more. But before we go to Sister Coker, just want to share this with you. Another reminder, and we're going to be playing this.
The spirit of resistance and justice. Let's honor our ancestors' liberation. This too means the demand to free Mumia Abu-Jamal now. Join us on Saturday, April 26, 2014, at the Church of the Advocate located at 18th and Diamond Street for the Mumia Abu-Jamal Celebration of Life. Beginning at 10 o'clock a.m., the Sons and Daughters of the Revolution March, assembling at 19th and Cecil B. Moore Avenue, then over to the Church of the Advocate. Inside, social justice forum. Outside, on stage, dead prayers, immortal technique, dice raw, and more. For more information, bringmumiahome.com.
All right, and that is what has been airing here in Philly in particular on several of the radio programs here. But nevertheless, we want you to know that if you would like that particular PSA that you can send out wherever, or if you want to air it on your program or any other venue that you may have available, put it on your Facebook, let us know, and we could send it right to you. We have it in that format ready for you. So again, if you would like to obtain that particular public service announcement, which again is for the upcoming Mumia Abu-Jamal celebration, just feel free to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Okay, we are now going to go to our line, and doing this, we're going to bring in Sister Coker to give us our history moments for tonight. And so let's do that. I think we have her right here. Sister Coker, do we have you?
Yes.
Very good. How are you tonight?
Blended. Praising our Creator for the truthful enlightenment we receive from Black Talk, and unfortunately, when mighty Black men speak the truth, they are killed or imprisoned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 2 weeks ago on our story, we learned about two singers born this month, Marvin Gaye and Carmen McRae. And hey, that rhymed. Now, tonight, in preparation for the Celebration of Life Festival, April 26, 2014, beginning 10 a.m. at the Church of the Advocate, at 18th and Diamond Street, we feature Mumia Abu-Jamal. He is one of the honorees, also including Father Paul Washington, Dr. Ed Robinson, and Marshal Eddie Conway. The Saturday, April 26th celebration will showcase live performances, speakers, vendors, resource tables, health providers, workshops about knowing your rights, prison pipeline, women in prison, and political prisoners, and more. Now, as Nelson Mandela was the most renowned political prisoner, our Philadelphia, Pennsylvania-born Mumia Abu-Jamal, 33 years death row imprisonment, has drawn worldwide attention. Due to the miscarriage of justice, that's why he has that worldwide attention. Witnesses saw a man flee the scene of the crime where an officer was killed. Investigators assumed Abu was the shooter and savagely beat and imprisoned him. Mumia was a political activist early in life. At the age of 14, he was arrested and beaten for demonstrating against segregationist George Wallace's presidency candidacy. Mumia was a founding member of the Philadelphia Black Panther Party. Brother Abu-Jamal became a radio journalist and had his own talk program on WUHY. Due to his criticism of the Philadelphia Police Department under Mayor Rizzo, Mumia was forced to leave his position And to provide for his family, he became a taxi driver, which is what he was doing at the age of 28 when he was driving on December 9th, 1881. He was accused of shooting a policeman. Now, most incarcerated indigenous Africans born in the United States and North America are political prisoners. Most of them are there and have no business being there. There are honestly some who have actually committed a crime, but most of them are just political prisoners. And I saw Mumia just before his illegal, unjust imprisonment and could feel his mighty masculine strength and dissatisfaction of the daily hell we live. And I had just performed my adaptation of Nina Simone's song Four Women at a House of Umoja anniversary celebration at the Cornucopia. Our dearly departed E. Stephen Collins asked Mumia if he had seen my Five Women program, to which Mumia responded, no. When Mumia was permitted to write during his incarceration residency, he authored two books of essays. One was Live from Death Row, released in 1995, and Death Blossoms in 1996. He also wrote articles for the Yale Law Review. The National Public Radio's commentaries from Mumia were canceled based on pressure from Republican Senator Robert Dole and the Fraternal Order of Police. Finally, we ask you to join the movement to free Mumia from man's incarceration, and we praise our Creator that he is keeping Mumia mentally free. And sister, please give us an update on Mumia's life, would you please?
I most certainly will, but we will do that a little later on, my sister. I want to thank you for bringing us that information. For those who are not familiar with Mumia's case, certainly you have heard something tonight that I'm sure that has helped to give you some insight. But, you know, again, we're going to keep reminding you that if you're not in the Philadelphia area this coming weekend, particularly on Saturday, April the 26th, I'm almost certain it's going to be streamed. So we're going to make sure we get that information for you as well. At any rate, we're going to move on. Again, Sister Coco, we thank you so much for that wonderful, wonderful information. And with that said, how other better way than to end this segment with this?
Friends, on the move, thank you all for coming today. And please join us later this month as the fight for freedom continues. When was the last time you voted for a person and didn't feel betrayed? When was the last time a politician really expressed your hope? Your concerns. When was the last time a politician spoke out against the state, the government? They have become the voices of our oppressors, an echo chamber for the very same system that makes our lives worse and worse every day, every year. Come join us in a movement that speaks for true freedom, that expresses what's in your heart, in your mind. Join us. Forbes founder John Africa said, when you are committed to doing that which is right, the power of righteousness will never betray you. Think about it. And join us. Thank you.
It's the year of memories featuring HyperAxis 5 versus HyperTrax. And the reasons are HyperAxis 5 ain't really moving at three speeds. Wow, HyperTrax
will win the competition. These companies are recorded by Noel Everhead.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights.
Okay, again, we want to thank Sister Coker for sharing that information with us. And certainly, as you just heard, we had a little complication at the end there, but you got the gist of it. We heard, of course, from Mumia Abu-Jamal. That was one of his latest commentaries and, of course, talking about the upcoming celebration of life. And as we stated earlier, you know, we've got to start asking about these politicians. What the hell are they doing or supposed to be doing? And I have to put it that way because it's that critical. It's that crucial. We got these people running around here. I mean, it is unbelievable what's going on, and we've got to begin to address it. So when we talk about the issue of traitors and sellouts and saboteurs, we're talking about this is coming in many forms now, and we need to identify it, but we also need to begin to focus on what are we going to do. So tonight when we talk to Brother Big Mike, Brother Mike, that's one of the things we're going to talk about. Now, we're going to go a little further into what we were dialoguing about last week, in particular, what one is now calling, it's so funny, we have these nicknames that we give people. You know, we all do that, especially in our community. We have a tendency to have nicknames for folks. And so now we've come up with one, or someone called me early and gave me one and said we now have a Sharpie. Now, for a Sharpie, if for those of you who use the magic markers, you know, you use what they call Sharpies. Well, it's kind of a play on words. Some of y'all might get it, some of you may not. But the bottom line is we're going to talk more about that issue, and we're talking about the Reverend Al Sharpton. There have been some additional reports that have come up that is connected now to the Republican Party and so forth and so on. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But also, again, we're going to focus a little more tonight on solutions. So when we talk to Brother Mike Gray, we're going to talk about some upcoming sessions to help us to better not only identify some of the new COINTELPRO kind of operations in our community, but also how we can begin to further address it in an intelligent manner, in an organized manner, but also in a very definite kind of manner. So with that said, we're going to now go into part two of our segment for tonight. And again, we want to begin to address traitors, the saboteurs, the other kinds of opportunists. And when I say opportunists, I'm talking about people who do this thing in such a destructive manner, and we've got to call it just that way. Well, you all know what I'm talking about. But at any rate, we're going to go to our live line now, and joining us right now is Brother Mike Gray. And, of course, for those who do not know or didn't hear last week's program, then, of course, you know Brother Mike is one of the founders for the 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement and also very, very active in the United Africa Movement. So with that said, we're going to talk about, again, this whole issue regarding Al Sharpton and others, by the way, but also hopefully Brother Mike can give us an update on what's going on with the Tawana Brawley situation. Now, for those, again, who do not know, there is some very serious things going on with that situation. And it definitely needs to be examined closer. It needs to be talked about. And we have to do that because, again, we cannot depend on other people to bring forward information for us. And so with that, you know, we have to make sure that we do that. So anyway, let's go to our live line, and we should have our Brother Mike with us right about now. Brother Mike, do we have you?
Yes, you do.
All right.
Good to talk to you, sister.
Yeah, good to be black.
Right. Blacker and blacker.
That's right, my brother. All right, well, greetings again, and thank you again for joining us. And we got a lot of good responses last week, my brother. I just want you to know. And so, you know, either that night or the next day, folks was calling me up and saying, that brother needs to be on more often, and when is he coming to Philly, and so forth and so on. So you got to know we got to bring you real soon.
Okay. I'm at your disposal. Just say when. We'll be there.
All right. Well, I know you're coming next Saturday for the Mumia Celebration of Life. So
that's correct.
We will see you. Yeah, see you and Brother Austin and Sister Leola and Sister Keisha. New York going to be all up in here next week.
Right.
Right. Well, that's definitely wonderful. But now let us kind of like recap what we talked about somewhat last week. For those who do not know, Brother Mike gave a wonderful overview of some things that have been question marked. And now I don't believe there's too many more of that. And the ambiguity has also dissipated. So now we can move forward with saying there are some facts that have been brought to light. This is not speculation. We're not here to gossip. You know, I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, who are familiar with our program, know that's just not our MO. You know, we just speak truth to power. You know, whoever doesn't like it, that's too bad. But the fact of the matter is we do our homework here, and therefore, for the most part, with what you hear, you can pretty much bank on it. So this is kind of recap what we talked about a little bit last week, Brother Mike, and then I also want to kind of go into the updated reports that came in this week, which was, of course, that Reverend Al Sharpton was paid by the Republican Party to, shall we say, intervene in some of the maybe voting or other kinds of popularity of so-called Democratic candidates. I mean, it's all the same thing either way, but still we've
right.
got to focus on how the game is played. So you have it, my brother. The mic is yours.
Okay, well, with respect to an overview, basically the initial stories that came out, you know, sort of almost a week and a half ago was relating to Reverend Sharpton wearing a wire for the FBI with the intent of trying to put major Italian crime figures, mafia chieftains, in jail. Now, at that time, certainly, when you go back to the early 80s, he did not have an army. He did not have an organization. He had next to nothing other than the clothes on his back. And there's no way possible that you can effectively, in any capacity, put mafia chieftains in jail. They are so insulated that it takes the best of electronic surveillance and other things to even mildly consider interdiction with respect to their drug activities and whatever other avenues they're using to raise funds. Reverend Sharpton was basically caught in a drug sting. And as a FBI agent posed as a Colombian drug dealer. After he was caught, the target actually was Don King. The middleman was Reverend Sharpton to get him. And so when they failed in their attempt to get Don King to help launder drug money and to effect be able to arrest him and knock him off his throne as the king of boxing, which Bob Arum sat for so many years, they in turn decided to squeeze Reverend Sharpton and to make him wear wire to report on black organizations. Now, that is nothing new. This has been going on for well over 100 years, going way back to as far as the NAACP, as well as other organizations, not just the NAACP, but they were primary feeders to the FBI, as well as military intelligence with respect to everything that was going on, going back all the way, especially with World War I. They needed critical information as to who was loyal, who was disloyal, who could they trust, what various churches, black associations, various black organizations, cultural, political, what have you. They had people, especially people like the NAACP, reporting that critical information as to who was who and what was what, especially along the lines of a Red Scare, possibly, things like that. So, you know, and as recently as a few years ago, it was discovered that there was a black death here in New York, similar to the FBI component, which the FBI has these relationships with every major police force in the country. So obviously, whether it's New York, Chicago, LAPD, and what have you, Philadelphia Police Department, they're going to have a mechanism in place where there's a clear relationship, there's an exchange of information, and there's an emulation on the part of these local police agencies with respect to the counterintelligence that the FBI was waging against the black community. So Reverend Sharpton does not have a monopoly on that. It's just part and parcel of something that's been going on long before Reverend Sharpton was born. Now, they got him into this drugs thing. Consequently, he had to report on the affairs of what was going on here locally in New York. And so when he tells you the story, it was the mafia. As I said last week, the FBI does not give you the option of what you want to do for them. They tell you what you're going to do or you're going to jail. It's a very simple process. You face jail or you wear the wire and follow the instructions. He followed the instructions. Now, in that, not only was it a New York thing, but he inquired as to the whereabouts of Asada Shakur, which would have been a big prize if he could deliver her. And he approached, Obafemi, who was one of the Panthers, to gain that type of information. He said he had money, but he had to see her. He had to see her and talk to her. Then he can contribute money to her cause to help her in her flight. So things like that all occurred, and he wore the wire a minimum of 5 years, as was reported by Newsday and other, you know, reporting agencies. So the FBI use you, and then they'll out you, for, you know, for to support their own agenda. So they did that, and so there was denials at that time, but he's come forward and admitted to wearing a wire, but actually changed the story as to why he wore the wire. So it's revisionist history. So that was basically in a capsule why he did it, because he was facing jail. What his target was, it was black folks, not mafia figures for drugs and all that. And with respect to your second question as to what's this about Reverend Sharpton in bed with Republicans, that's an old story, but basically it's an accurate one. Was he in bed with, well, first of all, you have to remember, nobody was on Fox News before he got this MSNBC gig. No one was on Fox News that was black more than Reverend Sharpton. Reverend Sharpton was going to the White House when Bush 43 was in office. So he was going back there then. Now, prior to that, obviously, when he went under Nixon and other people, it was with James Brown. But on his own, he was able to go there under Bush 43. Now, that's basically because he helped Bush 43 get in office. He was the one in 04 that under Roger Stone. Now, Roger Stone was the guy that delivered Florida. I know we often think of Catherine, whatever her name is, delivered Florida to Bush in 2000. It's not totally accurate. The person who delivered Florida to the Bush administration was Roger Stone, a Republican operative who is a master of the dirty tricks. Now, he comes out of a camp that has quite a few people that mastered it. He was the youngest one in that camp, but he was extremely thorough. He delivered, I could tell you the other guys who tutored him and taught him, but the fact is Roger Stone was the one who delivered the goods. They needed somebody to deliver, like in 08, they needed somebody to deliver Ohio. His job was to deliver Florida, and he disenfranchised tens of thousands, actually hundreds of thousands of blacks who could have voted. He was able to get them off the voting rolls and, in essence, deliver Florida to Bush 43. As payment for that, he became sort of like not the interior minister, but the person that was in charge of all Native American land deals, you know, the things that ultimately delivered them casinos and the like, you know, federal land that was originally theirs. He played the middleman and made millions of dollars without having a cabinet position where they would have been in, you know, the six-figure bracket. he was able to get in the 7- and 8-figure bracket just by negotiating these deals. And this is what he did. And so in 04, he was still running operations for the Republican Party, and they had a concern with respect to Kerry being able to outdo and outspeak Bush in their one-on-one debates. So they wanted Kerry weak, and they also had a problem with Governor Dean, who they felt would be a strong candidate. So he needed to be knocked out of the race totally. So that was Reverend Sharpton's his assignment. He got Dean out, who was leading at that time, and weakened Kerry, who wobbled in to the one-on-one election against a sitting president. He was weakened at that time. So it is not unusual. And, of course, at that same time, Reverend Sharpton played a key role in getting Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, who's a Republican, into office in New York in 2001. So he has a long history of sleeping with Republicans. You know, he's not discriminatory with respect to who he sleeps with. So he had no problem getting Bloomberg in office, getting Bush in office, and to reinvent himself in time to claim that he was an Obama supporter, where he was really a Hillary Clinton supporter. But Obama beat her, and at that point where she was beaten, then he jumped on then U.S. Senator Obama's bandwagon. But again, he has a long history of sleeping with Republicans. I mean, that's just the way he is. That's how he's made. He will go with the highest bidder. And at that time, they were bidding. The stakes were high. This was very critical, you know, that 2000 race. And so he developed a relationship in 04 with Roger Stone. And Roger Stone was the same one that took out Elliot Spitzer out of the governorship in New York. This is the same Roger Stone. I know the papers are reporting the wrong name. His actual name is Roger Stone. I think they were calling him Ron Stone or something like that, but his name is Roger Stone. And so he has a long history as a Republican operative that masters of dirty tricks. And he was the one who actually ran Reverend Sharpton's 2004 campaign. He bankrolled it. He ran the campaign. Very rarely was seen in public. But he was the guy that put Reverend Sharpton up in those expensive hotels, took him all over the country, got donors, got Republican donors, because to qualify to run for president, you have to get a certain amount of states, a certain amount of money in each state. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he was able to make that happen. It was Roger Stone, and so he has, like I said, a long history for a guy at his age at that time who was a young guy. But, you know, he learned from the best and was very effective in his operations. You know, it's his intelligence operations had no equal and still doesn't to this day. I mean, when that guy's on you, you know, you better bring your A game. And so that's the guy who ran Reverend Sharpton's campaign. And you would just think, how does a black preacher end up in the same camp with a guy like that? But, hey, you know, by now we should not be shocked.
Absolutely not. Now, Brother Mike, I think it's important that we also now connect some of the other dots. And you, of course, being a very active member of the United African Movement, for those who do not know, I think it's important that we be able to kind of give some insight. Now, a little while ago I mentioned, of course, Tawana Brawley. And, you know, very shortly I want you to give us the update on that. But I think it's important that we, in terms of a little bit of what happened when the Tawana Brawley rape occurred. And the fact that at that point, Reverend Al Sharpton was an advocate, for lack of a better word, very much involved. Now, the reason why I think it's important that we point this out, and family, please note that this is not an attempt to dread up or bring up, you know, some old news or things of that nature. This is not it at all. I think it's important that we understand and overstand better how some of this happens. For those of you who have never experienced this, believe me, it really helps when you're able to hear it in such a way that you can really connect to it a lot better. And so we know that if any of you are doing anything that's really helping our people, 9 times out of 10, you're going to be in a position where you'll be confronted with various types of situations and or persons who are, you know, bringing that situation to you. So it's important, again, that we see the shifts and how some of that happens. And in this particular situation, we can, again, show you. We can give you the facts. Now, I'm going to ask Brother Mike to just kind of revisit some of this with us so that we can, we're going to fast forward in a moment, but it's important that you understand and see how people will rah, rah, rah when an issue is, like, hot and it seems like it's getting ready to go in a direction. It's important that you realize how folks want to be all up in your world then. But then, if given the opportunity, or shall I say, made a better deal, they'll flip on you in a minute. I know. I've had that happen to me, too. So I'm real clear about how that stuff goes. But again, it's important that you hear how it has happened to others. And note, you can tell when you see consistency. When you see people who are in the position today and they still saying what they were saying 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago in terms of their commitment to black folks, and they haven't shifted from that. Well, that's what we're talking about. And so with the United African Movement, we can definitely say that that has been a clear example of consistency, of commitment, and certainly of a no-sellout position. And for me, which is why today our attorney, Austin Maddox, is still not being, has not been reinstated, even though technically, I mean, there's no reason. But that's a whole other story. But anyway, Brother Mike, tell us a little bit about what happened and how the, I can't put it, I can't be diplomatic tonight, how the betrayal went into effect.
The thing, well, put it this way. A 15-year-old girl, and we must remember that she might be in her early 40s now, but when this happened, she was 15 years old. A 15-year-old girl who was en route home was accosted, and the individuals that she later was able to identify all admit to being in that area and all admit to being together. Among them was a police officer, attorney, assistant DA, district attorney, assistant district attorney, and also one was the son of the second in command of the New York State Police. So they were all there in one location together, and several people who knew them had expressed that when they go drinking, they really do wild, obsessive things. And they were in the very area and was even identified by the mailman, who testified that they saw a little girl accosted by some men, and he was able to describe the vehicle and saw that this whole thing was strange. Now, when she was found, and I'm just going over some brief things, because we are often told, and it seems to have been reverberated around the country, that it's a hoax. That's what Robert Abrams basically wrote in all his paperwork. It's a hoax. The people never said that. The grand jury never said that. That's Robert Abrams saying that. Well, the fact is, if she was on a the Koslow scale, as they call it in medical terms, if between 0 and 15, she was considered a 3, which is 0 is death, and 15, you're fully alert. When she was found, she was rated a 3 by medical professionals. Her hair was cut, feces smeared over her body, could not respond to pins being stuck in her, could not even respond to the ammonia stuck under her nose. It was very clear that she was close to death. All the things relating to the very people identified from day one. They said that she wasn't speaking. She told her story to several people, to a black police officer, to the FBI, to the people gathering the facts in the district attorney's office. She told her story to everybody, but yet they purport that she never said anything and refused to cooperate with them. She was being advised by Mason Maddox and Sharpton. She had, in my humble opinion, the best black attorney in the country, in Alton Maddox. She was being advised correctly how to avoid the minefields. And the fact of the matter is, it was crystal clear in no time that they were, since day one, from the minute she was found in the hospital, from the minute she was found and rushed to the hospital, they watched her, knowing full well you don't watch a rape victim. They watched her. They gave the information after the fact of her aunt demanding a rape kit be done. You know, her aunt knew some things about, you know, this type of situation. So she knew that there should be a rape kit. And after the fact, they employed the rape kit and gave it to a police officer who was an expert on arson. He was an arson cop. And, you know, arson has nothing to do with rape. So it was just so many inconsistencies. And as I said, on that scale, if you're rated a 3, you're close to death. And the fact is, she can't train professionals. Her body was close to death. They knew that. All the signs were there. She's not a trained CIA person. She's not trained in some 30, 40 years of yoga where you could slow down your heart or your body functions and all that stuff. This was a common, typical 15-year-old girl, not trained in black bag operations or any of those things. So the fact is, these things did happen to her, and I know that for a fact. And in the process, a white cop was killed. You know, there were some holes, some glitches, as they put this thing together. And then later on, you know, NAACP and all them played a role in selling her out, and some internal people also, you know, was paid off. But the police officer who was supposed, because she even heard discussions about them killing her, and the person who could, who for whatever reason could not bring himself to shooting her, was ultimately killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they called it, they tried to call it a suicide, but it was clearly a homicide. And since there are only 4 types of way to describe a person's death, is either natural, accidental, suicide, or homicide, they didn't give it anything, even though they said it was a suicide. The medical examiner didn't, just left it blank. And then later on, under even pressure, anybody that looked at it knew that it wasn't a suicide. I mean, they didn't even have a note. They couldn't even find the gun the first day. I mean, if you blow your own brains out, the gun should be right near you. You know, so it was covered up from start to finish, and they had to call it a hoax. And even one of the jurors, you know, came forward, a black male, he came forward and admitted that they did not write that thing saying it was a hoax or anything. That was Robert Abrams. So the Tawana Brawley trial, this is just one of over 500 years of our sojourn and intermingling with interfacing with whites. This is just one of many rapes that, I mean, they were raping black women on the coast of Ghana, you know, in the late 1480s and 1490s, as they built up a beachhead along that, long before the so-called transatlantic slave trade went into effect. They've been raping black women, and this is just a continuation of that. Nowhere has white men ever going to jail solely for raping a black woman. It's always been sort of their inherent right to pick and choose who they want and rape. And she tried to, in essence, and the Tawana Brawley team, in essence, tried to put some very powerful white men in jail. And you know, if one person had a father and an uncle that's a judge, as I said, one father was second in command of New York State Police, the entire state, and the other one was a police officer who was killed himself. Now, there were three other whites involved, so it was six of them in essence, and they continuously abused her over a four-day period from late November on, and ultimately, when the news came out and the team came together, the NAACP threw a payoff, you know, who was in it at first, and it looked like they were going to help after a payoff of, I think it was $25,000. They bowed out, and so many people here turned on Tawana Brawley in New York. It's we could do a roll call with the list of people that have done that repeated what they heard from then-Governor Cuomo or from Robert Abrams, the New York State Attorney General. Basically, in essence, they said it was a hoax, and all of these people involved, and the late Edward I. Koch, who was the former mayor of New York for 12 years, he went on record saying that Reverend Sharpton told him off the record that that it was all made up. And he encouraged Reverend Sharpton to come forward with that information. But reluctantly, on the day of, Reverend Sharpton refused to do the press conference with him. And he guaranteed he would stand there with him, basically, and hold his hand and see him through that. And, you know, and basically gave him assurances that, you know, your career won't be over. This will enhance you. So, but he didn't do it, you know, because obviously he felt that to lose a mantle of black leadership puts him in a precarious position, because his only sole purpose is to be able to galvanize other black leaders in black situations to be the point man and go all over the country and be able to quell riots. Whenever things get hot, he has to be the one to come in to stop it. And it, in essence, what that does, that destroys organic links to leadership where they would develop if it was not for someone coming in to take over. But they've used them in situations where, whether it was St. Louis, whether it was in Ohio and other places where things got really hot and they were like really bad, ugly shootings by the police department, they would bring him in there, or whether it was in Gina, places like that. He's there, like in Malcolm described, from Message to the Grassroots, to control blacks, not to lead them.
All right. Well,
so basically, Tawana Brawley told the truth, as Spike said in this movie. Tawana told the truth.
When did it become somewhat obvious that the fix was in, that the trade-off was occurring? Because at some point, Attorney Antonakis also represented.
Well, it became apparent when you saw Robert Abrams, instead of investigating Pagonis, Patterson, and you know, and the Harry Criss, instead of investigating their whereabouts, where they was basically not telling on each other, but they gave more than enough information to show that there needed to be not only a grand jury convened right away, but there needed to be an indictment. And the FBI knew about, you know, criminal activity that was going on up there anyway. But the fix was in when Robert Abrams went after Tawana Brawley's family, went after Tawana Brawley, went after her mother, Glenda, went after her aunt, Juanita, and did not go after the very people who, in fact, raped her. So you should have, we should have known right then that there was something wrong with that, and Alton Maddox never approved of Robert Abrams being the one. I mean, when the governor, you know, they pressed for a special prosecutor, but they didn't ask for Abrams. He, in turn, actually broke the law, the governor, by appointing a political figure to be the special prosecutor, and that's an elected official. that position is elected. And so that person cannot be fair and impartial because he's the governor's lawyer. He's the governor's whipping boy that in turn can enforce and impose their will on you because that's the attorney general. You mess around with him, you're going to get indicted on something. So the governor sicked his dog on the Tawana Brawley team. He went after them and went after Tawana Brawley's family, but did not go after the people who actually raped her.
Wow.
And then later on, you know, yes, there was some inside stuff with Mason and, you know, having these dialogues with the opposition. And certainly Shompton was all talking to the other side because he had a relationship with the governor, has a relationship with the president governor, who was the governor's son at that time, and his chief of staff, Andrew Cuomo, who's the son of Mario Cuomo. Reverend Shompton has an endearing relationship to this very day with them. So, I mean, it was flawed from the beginning, but automatics allowed them two to do all the speaking because the legal work was being done by Attorney Maddox. So for him to have those 20 hours a day that he stayed up just all doing research and gathering the facts, being the true finder of facts, instead of which is what the district attorney's office is supposed to do, he was doing all that work and allowed them to be on TV and radio, which was they were in all their glory doing that while Attorney Max was trying to defend the honor of all black women in general, and Tawana Brawley specifically.
You know, it's very interesting how the media can be such an influence over our people, and really, you know, a instrument of not only persuasion, but an instrument of manipulation. And so I think this was a classic kind of situation that we saw, because once it started hitting the media that, oh, this was a hoax, this was a hoax, then it seemed like more people began to doubt what happened. I mean, and now note, we're talking about, do you understand the history of this country? Have you not heard what these people have done, will do, are doing? So rather than to, if nothing else, deal with the benefit of the doubt, you had people who just immediately jumped ship and saw the opportunity, once this other stuff was being said, to go ahead and side with that. So here we are again, brother, you know, bringing these stuff to light, and the point is we have to look at our behavior. Now, in recent programs, we had on Dr. Ashanti, Kwame Nana Ashanti, who talked to us about the Willie Lynch chip, the Willie Lynch syndrome. And so what we want to continue in connecting these dots is to point out behavior. What is this behavior? What activated it? What helps to stimulate it? And so,
well,
once again, we want to point out the media. But go ahead, brother, sure.
Yeah, let me just say that. If you just go back a couple of years to when Dominique Strauss-Kahn raped and beat Sister Nafiatou Diallo. Now, this case never reached the heights and in the enormity of Tawana Brawley. It was big, and 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement, I'm proud to say, we took a pivotal position in defending our sister. Now, a lot of money was being put out there. A lot of money exchanged in hands of, they were offering $250,000. It went up even higher to $400,000 that they was offering continental Africans that had some dirt on her. I mean, they were offering that kind of money. Now, you know, a lot of these continental Africans come over here, they don't have much money. They just barely making it. I mean, they have degrees, master's and doctorate degrees driving cabs. And they were offered, when the sum was just $200,000 and they didn't bite, they went up to $250,000, $300,000. They went all the way up to 4, trying to get some information on her to this to just miscarriage her and just to knock her whatever image she might have had at that time, knock it down a peg or two, because this is all calculated. This is all counterintelligence. So they were doing that. Money changed hands in Tawana Brawley. Money changed hands in Dominique Strauss-Kahn. They were offering big money, and they didn't get one person from Guinea that would say anything bad about this woman. That speaks volumes as to her character. They couldn't get one person, and so many of them knew her in the mosque and outside of the mosque, knew her, and not one. And they have some of the most minimal jobs you can imagine, and none of them would accept the money to help Dominique Strauss-Kahn. So the same thing happened to Tawana Brawley. I mean, as I said last week, the technical term for that type of incentive is called meritorious manumission.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's as old as chattel slavery, that you get rewarded when you report to the master.
Right. That's
and
right.
they have been rewarded for a long time in so many cases. That's all a part of a black desk operation. You know, when you use COINTELPRO, part of that is to reward certain people to get information. You don't just say thanks and rub them on the head. You have to pay them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so in our community, we have to understand that the FBI use assets. People that are not FBI members, they're not FBI officers, but they bring valuable information to the operation. They're called assets. And that's what they do. So we have to understand that we might call a certain person a leader, but to another operation, a governmental operation, they are assets. And they have been able to play that dual role. Literally every national leader that we've had throughout the course of our sojourn in America, the overwhelming majority of them were all assets. There are exceptions, obviously, Elijah Muhammad and others, you know, Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
They are
mm-hmm.
exceptions. But for the most part, all the national leaders that we've had that have reached that status, even respectfully, a Booker T and others, had to go back and strategize to get white philanthropic dollars. And in doing that, you have to do something. You have to give something back. So, yes, Booker T created a phenomenal institution and taught black men various skills with their hands, for the most part, that they could use to have a productive life. But some would argue, whether you come out of the school of W.E.B., well, who also gave information,
right.
and so many others, they it's just that balance. And the thing, when all is said and done, is what legacy are you going to leave behind? So with all that Booker T did, he gave information, but he got millions of white dollars, was able to educate a lot of black minds. W.E.B. Du Bois gave information and helped Dew Garvey.
Mm-hmm.
He, as well known as he is, as respected as his intellect was, and then became a so-called leading Pan-Africanist, look what he did to the greatest Pan-Africanist of his day, to Marcus Garvey.
Mm. Mm.
So it's a long history, and we have to develop a foundation where we can't be penetrated, because in order to be effective, the government has always said you have to penetrate. And that's not a sexual term. You have to penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what the FBI, CIA, intelligence gathering and local police agencies do. They penetrate. In doing that, you have to utilize, you have to utilize leaders and certain members of certain organizations. As I said last week, when they had the Black Death operation going, and it's still going, by the way, here in New York, they admitted that when Alton Maddox was able, under a judge, to see the snitch list, and the NYPD argued against him holding on to it and being able to leave the court with it, The NYPD argued that if they gave Automatic the snitch list, it would set back police intelligence 25 years. And so the same thing will go on. I mean, the sons and daughters of Rizzo still live in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
Those people
no
that
doubt.
He raised 3-4 generations later are still running the police department in Philadelphia. So it's no different there. The same thing with the Daily Machine in Chicago. It's still in effect. And I'm not talking about this last Daily. I'm talking about his daddy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same.
Mm-hmm.
It's no difference in LAPD with what Chief Gates was doing or what's going on now. I mean, this is why we have to stop building houses made of straw. We got to start building our organization made out of bricks. If you know your house is surrounded by crocodiles and by lions, well, I don't want to say lions because that's just too good to describe what white power structures lions, but I'll just say snakes. If your house is surrounded by that, you have to build a foundation out of something that can stop that from penetrating. Because
Absolutely.
As long as we allow this penetration to occur, then it's going to keep happening. And so someone who's listening to this will say, well, why are you dogging Sharpton? Why are you dogging NAACP and all this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying that if you are sick, when the body is sick, it needs to be diagnosed. And when you diagnose it to remedy the problem, you have to know, is the problem in your head? Is the problem in your foot? Is the problem in your stomach? You're not going to have, if you have a dental problem, you're not going to have a podiatrist. That's a foot doctor. Take care of your mouth. And conversely, if the problem is in your feet, you're not going to use a heart specialist, a cardiologist. You have to use the proper people to take care of the problem. And I'm just saying that at this late date, we've seen what the counterintelligence program did to Malcolm. We see now what it did to Mumia. We see what it did going back to Dr. King and so many others. So why are we continuing to make these same mistakes today? As I said, I'm pointing out facts about Sharpton. I'm not dogging him. If he didn't sleep with the Republican Party, if Roger Stone didn't run his campaign, I know a lot of good people at National Action Network. They've never said to me, brother, you lying. They might have said, why'd you say it? But ain't none of them ever told me I was lying. They've never told any member of 100 Blacks, we making this stuff up. We just giving you the facts. If he didn't wear that wire on black folks and didn't do what he did, then we would have nothing to say. But the fact is, he did. And why are we continuing to go down this road? It's like getting on an escalator going nowhere and keep wondering why you end up losing. If we have a problem, let's resolve it. I said build a house made out of stone because you cannot allow yourself to be penetrated. I'm not surprised in the least, sister, when I've heard of them going after you. You had to be penetrated. Well, they penetrated you to a point where people around you got rewards. That's penetration. That's meritorious manumission. That's counterintelligence. Counterintelligence is a simple science. It's learning the culture. Is learning the conditions, the foundation of what you have, and then being able to destroy it. Mm-hmm. How do you penetrate something that's already standing, it's in effect, it's running, it's moving? You have to develop a system to do that. Well, they found out a way to do it to you. You gathered over 2 million sisters in one location at one time. You and others close around you, but they was able to penetrate you after the fact and to knock you down a peg or two, because that's power, sis. And I'm saying that's what they do. They didn't invent this tactic for you. They started this over 100 years ago right here in North America. And they perfected it now. They perfected it. They're better than what they did to Malcolm. They're better. Boss is better. It's more creative. What they did to Garvey, they've gotten better. But we haven't adjusted to Garvey. I mean, we've looked at things from afar. We've looked at brothers. Let's say what Bernard Cord did to what's his name, Maurice Bishop. You know,
right.
We've seen that. Mm-hmm. We've seen that. Whether it was Mandela or others, we've seen Mandela forced to give up his wife. I mean, I respect the legacy of Mandela, but what forces, what call can be made to make you give up a sister that stood with you for 27 years while you were in jail? We have to understand this science and stop playing with it. We have to just look at who spoke to Alex Haley. He was giving information on Malcolm. While he was interviewing and spending all those hours with Malcolm, he was also giving information on Malcolm. So,
wow.
I mean, what am I supposed to do? Act like I don't notice and just be quiet and not say nothing? And then have to hear somebody say, well, why are you dogging Rev? I'm just saying, if I said anything, and if you're going to open the phone lines, if I said anything that's not accurate about Rev, challenge me on it. Because I ain't even opened the book on Rev. Don't force me to open the book. So if you want to talk, if you want to defend Rev, I know plenty of people in National Action Network. And like I said, they have never said, brother, you lying about Rev. If anything, their eyes are being opened and they looking at Rev in a different way now. Because Rev got to spin it. I mean, he was on radio today saying he's been involved with mess, but why are you looking at something from years ago? Look at now. Well, I'm looking at now. And I know what I see. When you go into the White House and when you cutting these deals with Bloomberg and you going all over the country privatizing schools and all this stuff, it's a continuation of what you was
right.
doing before.
That's right. That's right. Now, on that point, my brother, I want you to hold that point because we're going to revisit that in a few moments. And that's really a very important point because as we begin to look at how this stuff connects, the fact that our schools all over the country are being closed is now this whole thing of setting it up for privatization. We're going to talk about that some more, but we're going to get ready to go to our lines because we got so many callers who have comments or questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Chairman Fred is about, yep, I see Chairman Fred there too, so we're going to bring him in shortly as well. We need to get this report on this sister who was beaten by the police down there in Cali. So we want to get that report. It's like 19 years old. So we're going to let people know about what's going on with that and how they can also support to make certain that this young sister gets some justice. But before we do that, we're going to take a couple of calls, and we're going to bring Chairman Fred in. Caller, you're at 7509. Do you have a comment or a question for us? Again, 7509, your mic is open.
Yes, dear Empress, I only have one word as it relates to COINTELPRO and penetration, and that's divination.
Mm.
We
All
have
right.
yet to use divination. I will just share this with you and be brief. During the time that Japan allied with Germany and bombed Pearl Harbor, they used the I Ching. And
right.
and had the general followed that divination reading to the letter, you would be spending yen right now. All right? And so we must return to our ancient sacred ways of being, i.e. divination, and that's all I'll say because spirit
all
don't
right.
lie.
All right.
Well, I like that term, brother.
That's it.
I like that term,
yeah.
But just remember – just remember that the FBI described black folks as emotional, not intellectual. They think we do everything based on feelings. And even though I like your term divination, the FBI does these things without sentiment. The police department does these things without sentiment. So even though I do agree with the term,
because they are
demons.
Sister knows what I'm talking about, brother. I'm not talking about emotionality. And
right.
I'm not talking about spirituality. I'm talking
right.
about divination. Are you familiar with the I Ching?
No, I'm not.
All right.
Right. Yeah,
well,
no, he's not saying divination. It's called divination. D-I-V.
Yeah.
Right.
It's our way of reading. It's a spiritual system of science that we have had for a long, long time. Like I
yes,
said,
sir.
We have, for instance, the Akan tradition.
Ifa. For those who might have heard of Ifa.
Out of which Sankari and Voodoo come out of.
Yes,
and it
sir.
Might sound spooky, it might sound whatever, but all indigenous cultures around the world had divination systems where they
yes,
would be able to connect with spirit, just like Harriet Tubman was able to avoid the captures as she sojourned via the Northern Star. We need to begin to revisit our ancient sacred sciences.
Yes, sir.
And that's all I will say. I love what you both are putting down. Continue, spirit knows exactly that. Spirit knows spirit.
Yes, sir.
And you
are doing a tremendous job, both of you. Continue, and I will hold you both in the highest spiritual realms of meditation that I know.
Thank you, brother.
All right. Good thanks,
right.
my brother.
All right
All
now.
Right.
Peace.
Yeah. And just so that I may elaborate a little bit, and these are some conversations that we have had in the past and will have in the future. We're talking about fighting this battle on all realms, on all levels. As all of you know, we have frontline soldiers. We got, soldiers that are on the computer. So it's going to be a variety of things that must now occur. And there are now some things that people are not afraid to talk about any longer. We should have never been afraid to talk about it before, but unfortunately in this system, many of us were taught that this is not good, this is bad, this is this or that. But a lot of that is being dispelled now. So as we now are blessed to know more about our ancient traditions, our ancient cultures, and even our contemporary cultures, we're now putting these pieces together. So you're going to hear more about and that was Brother Amanasi. You're going to hear us talk more about something that we've been talking about, but on my end, the Shekhmet Society is one of the things that we began to put together to help deal with some of the less tangible things that are obviously happening. And for those who think it's not, then you need to do more homework. But, Brother Mike, we're talking about addressing this situation all across the board in ways that, many, again, may not talk about. But at the same time, we have to let people know that this stuff is real, that these people are doing stuff behind closed doors that most of us can't even dream of. And so until
right.
some folks stand up and say, hey, we know what you're doing. You got it from us in the first place. But guess what? We're getting ready to show you something that you don't know. So, we'll have that conversation another time, but trust me,
right.
it's coming. We're going to take one more caller, and then we're going to bring in Chairman Fred Hampton to join us and get this report on Sister Nubia Bow, who was beaten the past few weeks ago on their train out there in Oakland. We're going to go to one more caller. First caller, you are at 9049. You have a comment for us tonight or something you want to share with us in regards to our topic or something relevant to that?
Yes. Good evening, Sister Empress and Brother Mike. How you doing? Yes.
Good.
All right, brother.
My name is Brother Lamar Brown, and I run my organization up here on the Eastern Shore. And I want to say one thing very quick. When we create these organizations, today, we have to not just screen the members, but we have to curtail the memberships to people that we know are doing the same things that we are doing. See, a lot of times these organizations like National Action Network, the NAACP, the SCLC, the Urban League, They bring in these people, but the people at the top, as Brother Mike has informed us, these are the people that got to give something back based on their position. Meritorious manumission was a slave snitching law.
Yes,
that
sir.
Meant that, and it started in the state of Virginia, the first slave state. Mm-hmm. And it's been around for about 300, it's been around for about 300 or 400 years. It didn't just start. And what this did, this gave a way for the African slaves to be able to sit in the midst of our freedom fighters and carry information back to the slave master. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they have, as you said earlier, they have perfected it. Now, I want to make a quick point about Malcolm. John Ali, who was labeled as an FBI informant by Lewis Lomax, when Lomax was interviewing Malcolm prior to Malcolm's assassination, informed Malcolm X while he was in the nation, that he had just left the nation, that John Ali was an FBI paid informant who was also married to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's daughter, and this came out in the book called The Judas Factor by Carl Evans.
Right.
So they have had a way of always infiltrating our organizations to the degree that they can come right in. If we run our organization, like I run my organization and I deal with people, but I only have one member, and that's me. Okay, so I eliminated that. After you look at a blueprint, and after being in the Black Panther Party when I was 16, and after seeing COINTELPRO come in and just tear up the Freedom Fighting Party for Black Panthers for self-defense, then I said, I can run an organization without a whole lot of members, and I use what Malcolm said. Many are few and few are many. So nobody needs to know who I'm connected with. And we can make progress on those notes. But we must be aware of Mr. Sharpton, because I've had my personal dealings with him, and he's a snake. But I'm just saying, he's out for money. And he will sell his soul to the highest bidder. This we need to be aware of. And we need to also understand that the people that are in some of these organizations, I'm not going to call any names tonight, but they are leading our people that are in the organizations in the wrong manner, in the wrong frame of mind, and their ultimate goal is personal wealth. And they will use by any means necessary to get what they want, and then they will jump ship, start a new organization, and move on. These are agents. We need to label them as agents, and we need to do that.
All right, my brother.
Well, okay.
What we're going to do is we're going to talk also about how we can begin to identify that. So I want to thank you, brother, because we want to bring in Chairman Fred, and
by
I
all
think Nubia is going to be joining us in a few minutes as well. But we're going to bring Chairman Fred in first, and we're going to open up his mic, and then we're going to bring in Sister Nubia, who is the sister we were talking about, who was, in fact, beaten by the cops in Oakland. Chairman Fred, we got you. Your mic is open.
Right on, Empress. Well, first, I'm always honored and humbled to be on the air or line with you. I'm in a bad situation. I'm traveling to Southern California on a crowded bus. I don't know how long I could be online, but I just want to take the time and exposes this one of the latest cases of police terrorism, and we always stress to distinguish that the term terrorism as opposed to using the euphemisms of brutality. In fact, we say every day is September 11th within our communities. The case of young sister Nubia, who was bathed on, attacked by the infamous BART police, Bay Area Rapid Transit, and later to add insult to injury. While she was held in custody in Santa Rosa, the county jail, she was also attacked in there also. And for those who have the luxury of not being familiarized with the infamous BART police, just a little brief history of infamous videotape shooting of Oscar Grant that caused one of the largest rebellions, this country has witnessed. In Oakland, California, who was gunned down by Johannes Mercer. Also, it's in such an atmosphere of rapid police terrorism, even some of the recent cases, so far, a fellow BART police was gunned down by the other part of police. They said it was an accidental shooting. So just to emphasize the type of climate we're dealing with. And I really want to just see the time, especially in the atmosphere and the time where there's so much discussions about, you know, the way with youth and how bad our children are, so on and so forth, and connected to this whole discussion about what's going on with this massive school closings. A lot of people say, well, what do we do about these youth? And our position is we have to defend our youth. These are babies. You know what I'm saying? And people say, well, they close these schools down. What are they planning to do with these children? And the position is they plan to send the penitentiaries to the graveyards. So I definitely want to seize the time to bring attention to this case of police terrorism. Since it comes from a lineage, a struggle of a father, a family, yourselves, comrades of mine. So, you know, just for the record, this is a full disclosure. This is personal as well as political. But the Bay Area, which has a history of resistance, the people, you understand, have been exposed to this contradiction. In fact, there's some videotape footage. You can actually hear the screams of Jim Nubia when she's being attacked by the infamous Bart police. And it's on YouTube, and she can tell you exactly where to go to see that. But she's online.
All
too.
Right,
yes.
Yeah, I think we got it, Chairman Fried. And I want to thank you again for, you know, making certain that we were able to connect with the sister. You and Sister Pam Africa, you know, had me to talk with her father last night. And, you know, again, this helps people to understand and overstand the fact that, you know, we're really organizing on a national level. And it's not going to be nothing that can go down in any city where our people are that we can't pick up the phone within a matter of moments and get some action done. That's what we're moving to do. And so I'm saying again, we got the word on this last night. With less than 24 hours, we're bringing it to you tonight, family. So this is the way we have to now organize all over the country, create that extended family to that kind of level. So with that said, Chairman Fan, you stay right there. Let me find our sister. I do believe we have her right here. Okay, let's see if we open up this mic. Sister Nubia, do we have you?
Do you? I don't know.
Yes, I got you.
Okay, great.
We got you. All right, sister. Welcome to New Day Resurrection and Liberation. And, of course, we have Chairman Fried on. We have Brother Mike on. And also Brother Mars with us as well, LeBron. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, just, you know, tell us what happened.
It's a very long story with a lot of details, but to put it as short and concise as I can, I was riding Bart home with two friends. Basically, Bart stopped, and for you all who don't know what Bart is our train system in Oakland. It's Bay Area Rapid Transit, and we're riding Bart home, and the police officers say that we need to come off Bart and don't give us a reason why we need to come off Bart, but basically saying that, you know, there was someone on the train or on another train, a car, that identified us, saying that we were soliciting money and we weren't doing not a thing. We were literally just riding Bart home, talking about what we were going to make for food, and it was so, you know, it caught us off guard so much so that we were just like, okay, well, we don't understand why we need to get off BART. We don't understand why we're being stopped at all. That turned into a bigger situation than it needed to be because they handled it just very incorrectly. People on BART were saying that we were innocent, saying that they were witnessed us just riding as they were, and the BART police threatened to arrest some of the witnesses that were, you know, speaking up on our behalf, saying that we didn't do anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing led to another. I was slammed against the wall, slammed against the floor in the video that people can find on YouTube under aggressive BART arrest, and that'll be like the first video since it happened so recently. That'll be the first video to pop up But in the video, you can see that I'm literally so close to the train, the edge of the train tracks, that my foot almost got ran over by the train. And I almost really, like, injured myself because he had me so close to the ground and, you know, my lip was busted. I was taken to Santa Rita, and I was assaulted at Santa Rita as well. But, yeah. That's pretty
much. Your dad said to me last night that for at least one day, they didn't even know where you were.
Yeah. The people at Santa Rita, they kept me isolated from everyone else. I almost felt as if, like, I don't know how to explain it, but I almost felt as if they wanted to keep me away from everyone because they didn't let me make phone calls the way I'm supposed to be able to make phone calls once every day. I was in there for 4 days. They did not let me make any phone calls the whole 4 days that I was there. Every time it was my, you know, my pod time is what they call it, they would say that the computers were down and they couldn't access my PIN in order for me to make a phone call. And, you know, that was definitely a lie because I would see other people during their pod time use their PIN. So I was like, okay, clearly the computers aren't down. You all just, the system is just really, it's really messed up.
Mm-hmm. Sister Nubia, how old are you?
I'm 19 years old.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. 19 years old. I'm 5'1". I weigh 105. I'm a small person. And for them to have assaulted me, so many deputies at Santa Rita were beating me up, putting me in a face guard, which is something that they put over your face in order for you not to be able to see anything. I could barely breathe. It was really ridiculous.
Sister, what injuries did you obtain?
It was mainly bruises and a lot of scrapes. Like I had on my face, I had a lot of scars on my face. I had like 3 or 4 knots on my forehead. My lip was bleeding, busted in a few places. Skin off my elbows was scraped off. You know, the usual bruising from the cuffs, swelling on my wrists. But the deputies were definitely trying to hit me in places that didn't bruise as much. One of the female deputies was actually punching me in my butt, and I guess they do that so that, you know, it won't leave as big of a mark or bruise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What did they hit you with? Do you know what you were hit with?
Mainly, they were using their hands to basically force my body to do things that were unnatural, putting me in different restraints and different joint locks and punching, a lot of punching, yes.
Okay. And what did they say were the actual charges, or what were you being accosted or arrested for?
I was arrested for, I guess it would be resisting arrest is what they call it, but honestly, I was not resisting arrest. I was literally, like, just trying to, you know, state my rights and tell them that I didn't do anything, I'm innocent. And, you know, the cop that arrested me, he wasn't one of the cops that originally was at the first initial interaction. So he didn't know that I wasn't involved in it at all. He just arrested me, you know, coming in clueless about the whole situation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Okay. Brother Mike?
Well, yeah, I would, you know, oftentimes, I mean, sometimes anyway, we have judges here in New York that have the, at least have the sensitivity to understand that a resisting arrest or disorderly conduct charge or obstructing governmental administration, those are all just reactionary things that a police officer can do. And those are, in essence, truly, when they're not connected to a crime, an initial crime, then they're thrown out, you know, sometimes. he in New York. I don't know, you know, how they handle things in Oakland, but did yourself or your lawyer find out what the original emergency was that caused you and your friends to be taken off the train?
Yes, it was about dancers on BART soliciting money. There was a complaint from a man on BART saying that there were dancers on BART soliciting money, and, you know, that was why we were
Is it a crime in California?
Identified.
Well, let's say worst case scenario that there was some accuracy with respect to you and your friend's conduct. Is it against the law to ask for money in the train station or outside of the train station in Oakland?
I'm not totally sure on that one. I don't want to answer because I'm not totally sure. I'm pretty sure that it is illegal, or they do call it soliciting money if there's amplified sound. But like I said, we weren't doing anything. We were literally riding BART home, and the witness who identified us or said that we were the ones, you know, dancing and soliciting money, he ended up saying that the whole thing was wrong and he was wrong about it, falsely identified.
I didn't cut you off. Go ahead, Ruby. I didn't cut you off.
No, you can go ahead.
With all due respect, I'll just like to interject. I'm not speaking legally, but politically. I just want to reemphasize, though that may be, I don't know if that's legal or not, but I just want to reemphasize that they do have a position that simply being African, being black, that's against the law. You know what I'm saying? So I just want to, you know, just reemphasize that. You know, the BART police and the BART police in particular have blatantly made that clear, and that and it's a position that's being just trickled down through every roll call, the 17th precinct in New York, through the BART police, through every slumlord, through every merchant in our community, to treat black people as Rodney Dangerfields of all races. In other words, no respect. And again, this is another case. You know, saying this is a business as usual. How they get down?
Well, the reason why I asked it that way, Fred, is because this is saying to me that in terms of the strength, the ability to organize in the black community, then I'm wondering how qualified it is if they're going to beat up a 19-year-old sister and her friends, who I'm going to assume was close to her age, and she doesn't even sound like a threat. Her voice is so pleasant and just so, you know, monotone, that it doesn't even sound like there would be a motivating factor other than the black community has not geared itself for war, has not geared itself to defend sisters like that. And so that's what I'm saying, because I'm looking at it in context with what we've been talking about, because the first act of war is intelligence, and if they know community is internally weak, then obviously they can have recreation by doing acts like this or Oscar Grant and things like that. But when the community strengthens itself and shows it will strike back and take action against things like that, that's the only way it's going to stop.
No doubt. And again, I think it's initially there's an arrogance that they've been operating with, where they blatantly state that, I mean, they just you know, attacking the community. Later on, when the response comes, although they were able to find where she was at, they got the word immediately that people from the community was, you know, going to call in, trying to find out what's going on, so on and so forth. They later on came with this damage control, you know what I'm saying, where someone, you know, supposed to get was soliciting for us, so on and so forth. We just like to see the time and the intense discussion that we can, Alcoholics Anonymous, say the first step in addressing the problem is recognizing we have a problem. So many of these cases, going straight, you know, I mean, going to the heart of it, the guts of it, and call it what it is, because it's embarrassing being oppressed. It is embarrassing to acknowledge that we are subjected on any given day for our babies to just, you know, to be in such a way. And to so even when they try to come with some sort of euphemism such as war gangs, war drugs, or you know, someone's soliciting funds, shoot it down through the door, you know, just you know, pull the covers off and call, you know, call it what it is. It's a nasty reality, it's a brutal reality, but it's reality all the same. I understand your point, you know, but ask that, but I my response was directed to you in particular to say, but I just want to just again, just think, you know, this, man, just see the time with these brutal terms, you know, saying to correlate to, I mean, the graphic depictions, which some of it can be seen on YouTube, of what's really going down in our community.
Okay, I want all of you to stay right there. We have a couple of callers we want to try to get in before we close out. Let's see, caller, you're at 1559. Do you have a quick comment or question for us tonight? 1559, your mic is open.
Thank you, Empress. This is Keisha from United African Movement.
Hey, Sister Keisha.
Doing Queen. It's a pleasure listening to you, Chairman Hampton, and, of course, my big brother, Michael K. Graves. But for the sister, you know, it's a shame what happened to you. You know, I saw the video a few days ago on YouTube, and it just disturbed me. This past week we had a discussion on Sister Tawana Burley, and I mentioned that the assaults on black women is escalating. And this is pretty much our fault because we refuse to get serious out here. We have to close ranks, roll up our sleeves, and put in real work. This is insulting that we would allow a 19-year-old child to be abused and the black community or the African community stands by and do absolutely nothing and continue business as usual. We have to get serious. And how do we get serious? We have to shut this system down economically, for one.
That's right.
Stop shopping. For two, we have to protect our communities. We have to let them know that if you mess with one of our babies, we're coming to see you, period. There should be an onslaught of black men and women in front of the homes of these police officers, these beasts, who beat this child. We have to get serious. We have to put fear in the hearts and minds of our enemies. This is another reason why we continue to be infiltrated. We get infiltrated because they know we're playing games. A lot of lip service and no action. I put out to the listening audience right here, right now, either you're a social parasite or a social engineer. It's time to get in the game and put in hard work, roll up your sleeves, and let's make this happen.
All right, Sister Keisha, as usual, you are on point. And
Sister Keisha is a strong sister, very principled and upright, and she just quoted one of the greatest black attorneys that ever lived. She just quoted Charles Hamilton Houston, either you're a social parasite or you're a social engineer. So historically, she's on good grounds, and her spirit is right. She has the spirit of a warrior princess, and she's just growing in leaps and bounds, and we're so proud to have her in United African Movement / the Freedom Retreat.
I know that's right. All right. Sister Keisha, thank you so much again, as usual. And, hey, sis, much love to you. Much respect.
Much love to y'all, and thank you for allowing me to
thank you.
Right on.
Right back at
you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Absolutely. Okay, we're going to go to another caller. You are at, let's see, you're at 4381. We're going to open up your mic right about now. You have a comment or question for us tonight. 4381, your mic is open.
Hi there, Sister Empress. This is Sister Hattie.
Hey, Sister Hattie.
Hi there. Just wanted to ask the young lady, the 19-year-old, that sounded like the exact kind of arrest that I had as a 61-year-old when I began to help Mrs. Dorothy Dunning here in Minnesota, being an activist, and I've always been kind of a freedom fighter around here. So I was wondering, number one, if the young lady is affiliated with or knows somebody who's an activist, because these things are very strategically done.
Oh, honestly? After they did this,
after they did this arrest kind of style on me, being a disabled 61-year-old black woman, and I fell to the ground because they wouldn't give me my cane. I got a walker in the car. And so I'm wondering if she has relatives that are activists. These are the ways that they come after you. That's number one. Number two question is, there's this concerted effort, and I guess Brother Mike, is it Gray? Brother Mike Gray?
Yes, G-R-E-Y-S, Grays, yeah.
Grays, I'm sorry, probably knows better about this than I do. And anyway, there's a real concerted effort to go after you sufficiently destroyed the black man. Now, let's see if we can get some of these black women, old or young, in the penitentiary system. There's this great effort, you know, to get
women,
you know,
now.
More and more just women now to get some kind of record on them.
Sure.
Well, the thing is, you should always, as the original Black Panther Party did, monitor the police. There's 100 blacks in law enforcement. We do. We monitor police and how they patrol the black community. The fact is, if we look closely, we probably will see other infractions in those officers' folders. No one just starts from scratch and starts the beating. So if we look closely, we should always make these complaints, have things in their record, because when you look at all the cases, whether it was Amadou Diallo, whether it was Louima and all these other police officers, in fact, they were all dirty. They were all extremely violent, and they had these violent histories. So you should always make the proper complaints, and as Noel Leader from 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement always say, organize, organize, organize. So to ask her, do she know people in the movement, she should know people in the movement. She, in fact, should be in the movement. If not, this should cause her to get around like minds and organize, because if we don't organize and we approach things individually, we will all be picked off. But if we band together and utilize our forces, then we can better defend and fight this monster, because you cannot do it by yourself. You are not in the position to take on the armed services, the Marines, Navy, the Air Force. You can't take on the CIA, FBI on your couch. You can't take on local police agencies, intelligence gathering agencies, just by theorizing about you know the law. You got to do more than that. We have to organize and be better. Our history is replete with situation after situation, going back as far as Garvey and others, that we have to be better. You know, we have to put ourselves in a better position that we're prepared before it happens, because now, yes, there has to be some galvanizing in Oakland, but Oakland has such a long history of struggle and resistance that we should be ready now. This should be a ground ball for the leadership in Oakland to make sure that those police officers never patrol the black community again.
Well, before we go
well,
back
to answer your question,
we want Sister Nubia to come back in, because to answer that question, I think it's important, but really that's already been indicated. I think when Chairman Fred said that her father is a comrade of his. So
oh, good,
that's
good,
kind
good.
Of already
okay.
been established.
Yeah.
Okay, that's already been established. But I want to go
okay,
back
good.
To Nubia.
That's what I was
Nubia.
Going to say. I was going to say
thank
that.
You. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Sister Nubia.
I was going to say that, yes, my family, I was born into a family of political activists. Of,
good.
Of yeah, so I can't say too much, but, you know, yeah, I definitely know.
Yeah.
It felt a lot like Asada when I was in jail. It felt like they were against me, because, like I said, I'm so small. I'm in the highest threat level of jumpsuits. I have the red jumpsuit. Every time I leave my cell, they have to put feet chains on me. They have to put all these different chains on me, and it's like I'm not a criminal. I'm not a criminal at all.
I think that was to send a message, and it was to traumatize you.
Yes.
And that's the name of the game.
Okay. We are running out of time. We want to get a few more callers in before we close out. Caller, you're at 7492. We're running out of time, so let's make your comment or question as quickly as possible. 7492?
Yes. Revolutionary Green. How are you doing, sister?
Oh, Green, my brother. All right.
Yeah, I just want to make a statement. I don't know, you know, the reality is that people must realize, you know, from my first inception of coming here, we was at war with the system, and it's just a continuation. I would like to, at some point in time, for people just look at the issue which just took place in Nevada around the confrontation between this farmer who allowed his cows to eat open grass ground. And the U.S. attorneys came out, tried to force him to move his cows. And he said, we've been doing this for years. And he refused to move his cows. And he called in a group of bunch of right-wing white boys. And they backed the whole U.S. Law enforcement down. And nobody was charged with no kind of crime, no kind of nothing. Now, just imagine if when Africans took a position like that, what would have happened? So it's clearly we're giving two sets of rules, two sets of countries, two sets of everything. So if the people can't see that, if that wasn't clear, just example of how messed up this society is, I don't know what it is.
Yeah,
but
brother, I would just say, real quickly, I would say to that, brother, I know the case you're talking about. That's, I think, in Nevada. Well, he was able to call some white elected officials and some white radio personalities, and they backed him. When we call black elected officials, they run for cover. There's a difference. We don't have black elected officials that's willing to stand up to police chiefs.
True, brother. I'm standing to indict for the indictment on the whole government, the system as a whole, because anytime you drop guns against law enforcement, that's a damn crime. We have known anybody in the African community drop guns against them, and we got away with it with no charge and no nothing.
Well, just a quick example. Mayor Giuliani used to go to all of the Yankees games, season games, World Series games, playoff games. He went to all of them. Governor Patterson, the first black governor of New York, goes to a Yankee World Series game, and he gets called to the carpet later asked to did he pay for that ticket or not, or was it given free? They never asked Giuliani all those years he was in office. And yet they asked a sitting governor, the chief executive of the state of New York, and he had to pay for the ticket after the fact. So that only shows you they have no respect for black elected officials, and black elected officials have not distinguished themselves by showing intestinal fortitude and standing for our community like Jewish elected officials stand for theirs.
No, that's right.
So this one raised the issue of the contradiction in the government in that response to people. That's all I was trying to do with you just now.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
I concur.
All right, brother. All right. Forward.
All right, my brother. Thank you, Brother Lee. Okay, we got just a few minutes. We're going to take another quick call. Caller, you're at 1330. You have a quick question or comment for us. 1330,
hey,
your mic is open.
Hey, sister, how you doing? This is Eric Josie, 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement. I'm glad to take a fine opportunity at the end of the show to make a statement. I just want to acknowledge my brother Mike. We go way back, and I just want to acknowledge that, you know, this brother is speaking the truth to power. It's not something that he's just speaking about. It's something that we have lived from day to day. We're almost 30 years in law enforcement, okay? In regards to what that sister was talking about, you know, it goes to everybody is calling him right now. It's just a lack of respect that this system, white supremacy, has for our community. And we don't understand that. We're just not going to get it. I know you're at the end of the show, but I just want to make a quick comment and validate. I had much more to say, but I just want to give my brother acknowledgement and call that I'm listening to him tonight. Thank you for listening.
And thank you for calling in. And I just want to remind everyone that we will be doing part three, our last segment of this dialogue, we will do next week for part three. and we will go more into what we wanted to cover tonight, but it's okay because we're doing what we're supposed to do the way we're supposed to do it. So next week, So next week we'll go more into the training sessions that are coming up, the ways that you're able to better identify the type of insurgents and so forth that is inflicting our communities and our organizations and so forth. So we just want everyone to know that next week we will continue this dialogue. But thank you again, brother, and hopefully you'll join us next week. Okay, let's see. We got one more here, and I think that's at 7940. Your mic is open. Do you have a comment or question for us?
Yes, greetings, Empress. I noticed that, and greetings, Nubian, and Chairman Brother Fred.
Greetings.
I noticed that the sister, I live local and with the guidance of Empress and Brother Chairman, we can connect up because I noticed that you are a targeted individual from a targeted group from the activism. And one of the things they always do, they traumatize the targeted person, and then they isolate them, then they torture them, and then they always use the system to cover up. And I agree with every caller on the phone. We must stop these white supremacists from doing the things they are doing to us. And one of the things we need to let our people know, either you for us or you against us, and don't come to us when you realize that it has to hit home. You got to come now because, as the sister said earlier, that a lot of us, we are in good with these individuals, and we are not. We are parasites, and we are helping them continue to oppress our people. So wrapping things up as I'm ready. I'm on my end. I'm from the Bay Area, too, and with the guidance, I'm down with the movement. And I do associate with the Aurora House, and however we can get together, I'm ready. Thank you for allowing me to share.
All right, Sustain. All right. Well, family, we have reached our last moments. We've lost our internet streaming, but we still have our podcast rolling, and so we're going to take this opportunity to allow Chairman Fred and Brother Mike and, of course, Sister Nubia to close us out. We're going to start with Sister Nubia with your closing comments for tonight.
Well, I wanted to let everyone know that I definitely will be moving forward with this. I heard a lot of comments, you know, saying that I need to organize, and we will definitely be organizing. So there's too many situations like mine or that are worse than mine, you know. So I definitely want to fight for justice, and we'll be doing that for sure, definitely. Thank you all for listening.
You're so very welcome, sister, and we will definitely stay in touch with you, and we'll be able to give our family updates as they develop, because we know they will.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, Tim and Fred.
Right on. Again, to me, says Revolutionary Appreciation to you, fellow panelists, Brother Mike, Sister Keisha, with a powerful call-ins, as always. Definitely standing clenched fists to young Sister Nubia and her family for their consistent history of struggle. And as I initially pointed out, her family, our dear comrades of ours, I know there's a lot of acronyms, but the POCC, BPPC, now with the CRG, that's the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, Black Panther Party Cubs, Community Response Team. Mm-hmm. We definitely on this case, we're going to be calling for all points of unity, exposing this act of terrorism again. Please go to the blog spot, Chairman Fred Jr., .blogspot.com, www.chairmanfredjr.blogspot.com. We'll be providing updates for our future mobilizations, court dates, protests, you name it. We will keep the people updated. Again, we know as we minister to people, we say, let the people, revolution is impossible. Revolutionary appreciation and love, and again, power to the people.
All right, Chairman Fred, and much love back to you. Big Mike, Brother Mike, your closing comments for tonight.
Well, I'll say to we wish the best, and we're looking forward to a victory with our Sister Nubia. Certainly to Sister Empress, to our brother Fred, to all of the callers and those that didn't get through, those that are listening, we wish you all Godspeed. We wish a full recovery for our brother Elambe Brath as he still toils in the hospital. Certainly we want to see Attorney Maddox, lawyer extraordinaire, reinstated to the court of law. And certainly we just wish strength and power to all those that struggle for justice. And we're looking forward to part three. We think it'll top part two and part one. Three will be critical because we'll do more solution stuff in that. Mm-hmm. And just thank everybody and wish Godspeed to everybody that's listening.
Right on.
Right. And family, again, we want to remind all of you that if you're in the Philadelphia area, make sure you be here. We're talking about for the celebration of life, the Mumia Abu-Jamal. Everything that we're talking about tonight is all connected. The fight to continue to get our political prisoners free, the reality of gentrification and how that's connected to the closing of the schools and how that's connected to the school-to-prison pipeline, it's all related. So in one way or another, what we've talked about tonight will affect you.
We're not directly, certainly indirectly.
What'd you say, my brother?
I said we also working on trying to mobilize Sister Nubia to get to Philadelphia for the 24th also.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
Yes,
I'm looking forward to it. Yes. And with that said, I want to also remind everyone that we didn't give you some Million Woman Movement updates. We're going to wait and do that for next Saturday, and we'll be able to give you a report on some of what has been going on or will have gone on from the Mumia Abu-Jamal Celebration of Life. When we come back next week, we'll be able to give you some real hot information because, you know, Immortal Technique, Dead Prayers, Dice Wrong, you know, so many others are going to be there for next Saturday. So we're going to have Kim Afriyed back again, Sister Nubia, our brother Mike. So it's going to be a hot program. But the one thing I wanted to share with you tonight, because I mentioned this on Brother Lee's program the other evening, and that is that, and we'll tell you more about this next week, we have been blessed to be able to move forward with a project that we started, family. Very soon, the Million Woman Movement will be able to go out into our communities here in Philadelphia as one of our first kind of stops, as you might say. And what we're looking to do is we're working on getting a bus that we're going to renovate. It's going to be an old bus, but it'll be our bus. We're going to renovate that bus, have it going into the community citywide here in Philly, and we're going to be servicing our sisters primarily first as our first step. We're going to service our sisters with GED, PrEP, literacy advancement, as well as a free lunch, and as well as health information and self-esteem building. We get ready to roll out with our own bus to service our sisters in our community. And before we get the bus, we decided that we're going to start pitching up some tents on some of these vacant lot property where they done knocked down the houses. We're going to set up some tents and service our people in the community. So we're going to give you more information on that next week because we need your support. But family, we thank you all again for taking the time to join us. And before we close out, guess what? We want to share with you one more time, Mumia Abu-Jamal. We must free him now. And as Chairman says, free them all. Isn't that right, Chairman Fred?
Yes, indeed. All yes, right. Indeed. No doubt. Free them all. And thank you, Empress, for getting on top of this in 24 hours. Right on.
No doubt, my brother. No doubt. And with that said, we're going to leave out with this message for you.
If you believe in freedom, the spirit of resistance and justice, let's honor our ancestors' liberation. This too means the demand to free Mumia Abu-Jamal now. Join us on Saturday, April 26, 2014, at the Church of the Advocates located at 18th and Diamond Street for the Mumia Abu-Jamal Celebration of Life. Beginning at 10 o'clock a.m., the Sons and Daughters of the Revolution March, assembling at 19th and Cecil B. Moore Avenue, then over to the Church of the Advocate. Inside, social justice forum. Outside, on stage, Dead Prayers, Immortal Technique, Dice Raw, and more. For more information, bringmumiahome.com.
Yeah.
All right, you got it right there.
Again, we'll be back next week, same time. Until then, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you, and that is in the spirit of Ma'adenhotep. But remember, there can be no real peace, meaning Hotep, until there is truly justice, meaning Ma'ad. And as we always say, and you hear us say, no justice.
No justice.
No peace.
No peace. No peace. All right.
All right, family. Till next week. Tutanana. Promoted to the Shenda. Together we shall win.
All right.